Hey everybody, this is Brad Bruce and I'm here with
Jace Marsiglia.
And you are listening to the 5195 podcast.
Yes, you are.
You got a little Jason Statham on that one, buddy.
Did I? Turkish.
Oh, great. Now the whole show is going to be Jason Statham. I mean, I'm not opposed, so.
I'm a boxing promoter.
I'm done. I'm just going to listen. Go ahead. Entertain
you're like, me. You're like, I can hear you doing this all day.
Yeah, I'm just going to pull up lines from, I don't know what movie he's in. Pick a movie.
What the fuck have you been reading?
I think I've only seen one movie he's in.
It better be Snatch, because that was the shit.
That was it.
I fucking love Snatch.
Oh, no, two. Crank as well. So.
Oh, I saw Crank.
Yeah. Crank was cool.
Seen a couple of Expendables. I actually enjoy the Meg movies.
Oh, okay. Okay, you know what? Maybe I have seen more Jason Statham movies than I thought I did.
Yeah. You have, because at this point, he's just been in everything.
Yeah. he's the English Bruce Willis. He tapped in when...
You're right. He just came in at just the right time and was like, I heard you need an action star. Did you need someone who does high kicks? I can square off with Jet Li. Fuck him. He's short. Twist me nips.
What movie is that from?
Doesn't he like hook a car battery to his nipples in like one of the cranks?
Oh my God.
I don't know. I've only seen one of them, but
wow.
I'm pretty sure a car battery and some clamps fit in at some point.
Wow. Okay, well.
None of that has anything at all to do with a word of what we were going to talk about
today. It doesn't.
That was a completely random
tangent. Not at all. I think what we're doing tonight, I think, is actually kind of cool.
Yes, this is it's not an idea I've ever heard before, other people doing, and I thought this was kind of cool because we're sort of, I'm not going to call them bench warmers.
Definitely not.
No, but these are people who are not necessarily the stars of the film, who steal movies, and probably deserve a hell of a lot more...
Accolades,
attention. Maybe their own films.
Yeah.
Toys.
Yeah.
The toy thing, I didn't even think about until you mentioned it. And I'm like, some of these guys really lend themselves to a NECA figure
or
something.
Yeah, they definitely do.
Some of it, I just don't understand. Right. So.
And what we're talking about tonight are underrated horror icons.
Yes.
Icons in our mind.
Icons to us, because clearly if they were...
We wouldn't be doing this.
We wouldn't have to talk about them.
No, not at all.
But we're going to shine a light on people who... Came in, gave it 100%, left, and everybody else is remembered for it.
Yeah, and I think some of these guys are, well, there's going to be people out there that go, are you guys crazy? Of course they're on the top of our list, but these are for the people that are surface horror.
These are surface, yeah, because there's my first one, I know when I get to it, people are going to be like, this person, they even got their own sequel and whatever. Yeah, but it's not, we don't talk about them the way we do other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's not a character that comes to mind when you hear that movie's title, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing today, man.
So are we going to do least to best? Because I only have five.
I only have five too.
Okay.
And the order I put them in, it really wasn't, I just kind of jotted them.
Okay. All right. Well, then kick it off.
You want me to kick it off?
Yeah.
My first one, and this is what inspired this list.
Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Kinderman in The Exorcist.
Wow.
The detective.
Okay.
And I'm talking about Lee J. Cobb. Always liked the character. Loved his character in the book, too. But it never really occurred to me until I watched it with my daughter, Madeline. And she was just like, I love this guy. He's like a big teddy bear.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, in a movie that's so oppressively scary, there's this detective who knows his shit.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very good detective. He cases the house immediately. He's investigating a cult shit around Georgetown and a murder that points to a 12-year-old girl. And he knows she couldn't have done any of this. And then there's that scene where he's having tea with or coffee with the mom. And he's poking around and noticing the papier-mâché animals that Reagan made on the windowsill. That just happened to match the papier-mâché stuff that was used to deface the church property and the statues. And it's like, these aren't things that Blatty or even Friedkin zeroed in on, like, this is a clue. Nope, you either notice it or you don't. And he doesn't even make a big deal out of it. And his character is just so friendly and almost bashful. And, you know, he sheepishly asks for an autograph before leaving, you know, and he's just, he's like your grandfather. He's the sweetest guy, but he knows his shit.
Mm-hmm.
And the argument that people could make is, well, he's the main character in Exorcist 3.
Right.
Played by George C. Scott that time. But when you think of The Exorcist, someone says The Exorcist, you think of a possessed little girl.
Right.
You think of priests. You may even think of the mom who gave a blistering performance. Nobody talks about Lieutenant Kinderman. And I think there could have been, had Blatty wanted it, an entire series, like a Sherlock Holmes-esque series of Lieutenant Kinderman investigating weird shit. It could just be crime novels, pulp novels. They don't all have to be paranormal. But Lieutenant Kinderman could have been William Peter Blatty's Sherlock Holmes, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to all be Kolchak.
Right, exactly. You know, and that's kind of what crossed my mind when I was thinking about it. But it was like, Kinderman is just such, to me, such an endearing character that gets almost no mention of by anybody.
Right. I mean, I'm the same way because I think Exorcist, I think exactly what you said.
Yeah.
You know, but after you said that and you go back and you actually kind of put some thought into his character, who he was, and he was really strong.
Very strong character.
You know, it's like, wow, yeah, that is a standout that you don't really think about.
Not just that, but one of the things I really enjoy, and this is exclusive to the director's cut, because it's part of the ending that was just kind of kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
But the little bit of an epilogue at the end of the director's cut, Kinderman meets up with one of the priests and, you know, hey, you had lunch yet? Let's go catch a movie, whatever. Well, before he strikes up a friendship with this guy, he asks, does the girl remember anything? And the guy says no. And he's like, it's for the best, probably for the best. And the thing is, he's speaking as someone who witnessed something extremely paranormal that no one's going to believe. And he just accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you know, I mean, he didn't enter this case looking for a demonic entity or a possessed child. He just thought there was a crazy religious nut, some sort of satanic zealot. And he was very, I arrest people.
Yeah.
When the shit hits the fan and he realizes what's been going on in this house, he's able to pivot and be like, oh, that's what's going on. And he wasn't the doubting Thomas detective that you get in all these movies. That's like, no,
mm-hmm.
I can't believe my own eyes. No.
When did this like occur to you?
When Madeline pointed him out. Okay. Yeah, she.
So prior to that, you were never really zeroed in on him? Because I mean, I wasn't.
I liked the character and uh-huh. I liked the scenes he was in.
Yeah.
But when Madeline pointed out just how grandfatherly and sweet he is, I'm right. like, he is. And it kind of made me take notice.
Yeah.
And then when I'd watched the movie subsequently, I really paid attention to how he operated. And not just Kinderman, Lee J. Cobb is Kinderman.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very subtle performance.
Because it's his performance.
It is. And and that's probably part of the reason it gets overlooked is because he's so natural.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so...
It seems comforting.
Very comforting. And in a movie with no comfort.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just something that I guess I appreciated or at least liked when I'd see the movie. But when I watch it now, I enjoy the Kinderman scenes even more.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever he shows up, I'm just like, what a fucking cool character. Mm-hmm. What a fucking cool performance. And the same for George C. Scott. He plays it completely differently. He plays it like George C. Scott. He's very gruff and, you know, he's George C. Scott.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still that character who believes what's going on. He's sensible. He understands. And he's cool about it. And I like both performances. I prefer Lee J's, but both performances in these Exorcist movies, they're fantastic. And it's just a well-drawn character.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and give that one
another
watch. Because, I mean, outside of number one being a masterpiece, my favorite out of the whole series is The Heretic. Why did you start laughing? I wanted to see what
you wanted to see the Pazuzu.
No, I am definitely going to have to go back and check that out because it does register.
Yes.
You know, these moments, they do register.
Because he's an important character.
He is a very important character.
But he's not important in the way that even the film cares that you know.
Right.
Because you're focused on the bedroom the demon, the girl, the priests.
Yeah.
That's the story.
Yeah.
He's peripheral. He's investigating something that he thinks is completely separate.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really give him a second thought.
Yeah. You know, that's a really good pull, because maybe we didn't even talk about that, but they don't necessarily have to be bad guys.
No.
To be this icon in the horror world that we're talking about. Yeah.
To make a dent.
And that's something that when I brought it up to you, you know, when I brought this up to you, you were like, oh, that's interesting. But right now, when you said it, I was like, that didn't even register to me that could be one of the good guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That's cool. So it opens up a whole other door for maybe.
It does. And the thing is, I'm looking at my list right now. Only two of them are bad guys.
Wow. Every single one of mine are bad guys.
Yeah. But these are underappreciated bad guys.
Right. Yeah. So my number five is Horace Pinker from Shocker. I feel like he should be way more prevalent in the horror world.
Especially such a fun movie.
Yeah. Too. I feel like Trick or Treat should be doing costumes and masks.
Oh,
and,
man.
You know, I mean, I think almost all of these people, I think some of them do, but like they should all have costumes and masks on my list. There should be toys and.
Oh, yeah.
They should be talked about more.
And how there isn't a toy of Horace, at least, you know, even like, you know, I'm picturing the Bride of Frankenstein where he's strapped to the chair.
Yeah.
Horace could come with an electric.
Yeah.
And just be, that's his display, you know, and how fucking cool would that have been?
It's such a badass character.
It is. It is.
Because it's like, for me anyways, I like him.
I did too.
You know, and I think that's kind of one of the things is where.
And what's funny, Mitch Pileggi, he's not an over-the-top actor, and that is a very over-the-top.
It's very over-the-top, and that's the thing is, like, I think, you know, with, like, people like Horace and the other people that are on my list, I root for them.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's kind of what makes an icon, where you're almost rooting for the killer over the Laurie Strode.
Right.
I was always rooting for Michael over Laurie Strode.
Sure.
I always was. And I think that's kind of, like, what makes these people stand out to me, and it's very shocking that they're not more popular than they are, even though, you know, people on our level, they are popular to them in the circle of the horror world. All of these people are very popular.
They are.
But it's like, I go out and I have other friends that I've talked to about Horace Pinker and they're like, what is that? That sounds like a Western name.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like,
he sounds like an outlaw of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. That's my number five.
I kind of wonder if we can stick with him for just a second.
Yeah.
Didn't the horror show with Byron James come out either around the same time or just before? Because this was House 3 in a European sense.
Right.
And he was another one that was killed in the electric chair and came back to haunt.
Same year.
It's a similar, yeah.
Same year.
But I would have thought Craven's movie overshadowed it and it still didn't generate sequels, it didn't generate. I think the biggest thing that came out of Shocker was the soundtrack.
Oh, the soundtrack is.
Which was full of metal. You know, it was just a great soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
But what a fun movie. What a fun character.
Yeah, no, it is. So that's my number five.
That's a good pull. One of mine, and this isn't even, you know, I'm not even thinking of it in terms of marketing and all that.
Uh-huh.
Chris from Friday the 13th 3.
Okay.
Another good guy. But she was the one who got the Texas Chainsaw ending at the end of 3.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one that gets carted off laughing.
Yeah.
She's lost her mind. I would have loved to have seen her come back because she was the one who...
He got her.
He got her good. Mm-hmm. And she was such a likable character anyway. But her fight and fortitude in that movie is almost, to me, better than...
A lot of them.
A lot. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I picture the whole last 20 minutes in the barn. She's scaling beams. She's, you know, throwing axes.
Oh, yeah. She's fighting, man.
She's kicking some ass.
Yeah.
And it was one of those deals where, like you said, usually we root for Jason. Or
yeah.
I found myself rooting for her because I'm like, look at her. She's kicking his ass.
Yeah.
She fucking hung him. She put an axe in his head that the axe cut is in his mask for the rest of the franchise.
Mm-hmm. She left her mark.
She left her mark. And it was just one of those deals where I was like, I know that they never really, aside from Tommy Jarvis, repeated characters.
Right.
But it was like, if anyone was going to be repeated, I'm like, she was a fucking feisty one. Mm-hmm. And I loved her character. And I believe her name was Dana Kimmel who plays her.
Okay.
She just did a great job.
Yeah.
She found a way to bring the innocence of the virginal character with this toughness that was like, you fucking go, man.
Yeah.
You know, and this was Jason Prime. This was Hockey Mask.
Oh, yeah,
Jason,
no, this now. Is it. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Cause, I mean, I love Amy Steele in the second one, too. She was more intelligent, whereas Chris, to me, was the first one that really gave him an ass kicking.
No, I agree. I always go back to it's the party movie. It's the fun
one.
It
is the party movie.
It is, because the first two are set up.
They are.
And their origin.
Yep.
You know, and then I think the third one is just like, you know, green flag, like, we're going for it.
We're just
the race has started.
We're just going to have a blast now.
Yeah, and, yeah. And you know what's weird? I wonder why, maybe you know, maybe I should know, but why did they pick Tommy Jarvis to come back as a, is it because of how affected he was?
I don't know. I feel like at the time, because they were killing Jason, they wanted a new vessel. And I think Tommy was going to be the setup through his trauma, was going to be the new Jason. It was just going to be Tommy.
Right.
But people realized after 5, no, we want Jason.
But you know what? Now, too, it's like there's so much of a better arc with the Chris character coming back at a later one, because she could be in a mental institution going fucking crazy. I'm coming out to get this motherfucker.
Not just that, but a lot of people forget that she was almost raped by Jason. Do you remember?
No.
She regales the guy, I can't remember his name, the one who gets his head crushed at the eyeball flies out. Yeah, she kind of regales this story about this like, you know, this redneck mountain guy who she was just sitting in the woods reading or took a nap or something, and he attacked her and he was tearing at her clothes.
Okay, I do remember that.
You know, as she's saying it, you see it playing out in front of her, like kind of in a blended shot. But it's very clearly Jason. And when she sees him again later, she recognizes him. He recognizes her.
Yeah.
And it's like she had an even weirder past with him, and she walked away from him twice. You know what I mean? And it's like, I think she's a very underappreciated character. I absolutely love Chris from part 3.
So do I. I'm a fan of a lot of the characters on part 3. I mean, we could do a whole show on part 3.
Like, part 3 is just a blast.
But, okay, so my fourth one is Cropsey from The Burning.
Love Cropsey.
Yeah, I do too. Like,
love the makeup.
I love the makeup. You know, and
I love the Jalo outfit.
Yeah, I've been sort of crucified for this, because I've told a couple other friends and they're just like, you're fucking crazy. But I think his reasoning and what happened to him is more impactful than what happened to Jason, you know, as far as story, you know, I know it literally is a Friday the 13th movie.
It is.
But it's in a weird way, more gritty.
Extremely. Did we title it? Did we tell people this is The Burning?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. The Burning. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's,
and it's like 1980. It's like right after.
Yeah. In fact, it's the movie Savini was doing that he didn't come back for Friday 2.
Uh-huh.
He was like, I'm off doing The Burning. Yeah. You know? And to me, The Burning is, it almost felt like Savini going, all the things we played with in Friday 1, I'm going to take it up a notch. Because there's, without spoiling it for anybody, there's another axe to the face.
Mm-hmm. Ah, spoil away.
You know, but yeah, there's another axe to the face. Whereas in Friday, the girl kind of slumps against the wall with the axe in her face. No, the axe goes in and blood just fountains out. And
That's prime Savini.
That's prime Savini. And then, of course, there's the raft massacre, which is just, we're going to get rid of most of the cast right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But Cropsey, just even as a visage, you know, not even having the mask or anything, very imposing, very scary character.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think The Burning is an awesome movie. That's a great pull.
It is. And I love that character. I love the makeup, like you said. Mm-hmm. You know, I love his shears.
Oh, yeah.
It's fucking awesome, because there's just so many different things you can do with that.
It cuts such a cool silhouette.
Yeah.
You know? But he's another one, like you were talking about, why don't we have Cropsey toys?
Mm-hmm.
There's no NECA for Cropsey.
Yeah.
And it's like, even that one, The Burning is not exactly a deep cut.
Right. No, it's not.
A lot of people know The Burning.
Yeah.
You know, not, and even outside of our,
I think the only thing that might be a little bit of a issue with the movie is one of the writers
being a Weinstein.
Yeah. Harvey being the
weren't guy. Were they both involved?
No,
was
no,
it just
no,
Harvey
no, yeah,
Weinstein?
Yeah. And
was he a writer or was he a producer?
No, he was a writer.
Was he?
Yeah.
No
shit. And
yeah.
But here's the thing is, like, even prior to all of his fucking nightmare shit he pulled, the movie still never was at the forefront. It was never talked about. It was something you had to find.
It was something. I mean, it was the one that I feel like it's another one like Sleepaway Camp where people discovered it more probably on cable, you know, or because even the, to be honest, even the VHS cover wasn't much.
No.
You get the shears, but it's like a couple making out in the, it almost looks more romantic than anything. There's nothing imposing or threatening about it the way there is Friday the 13th. But MGM had thought enough to give it a special edition in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Which was surprising to me. And then, of course, when Scream Factory got a hold of it, they lavished it even harder, you know. But it was one of those deals where there's been pushes to get the movie more seen and more recognized, and nobody talks about it.
I mean, I remember one time at Monsterpalooza, someone had cosplayed Cropsey.
Oh, how cool.
And obviously people knew who he was, but there was a lot of people that didn't.
Yeah.
Because I had saw after the fact on all the social medias pictures of him and people like, they don't know who this is, but it's a cool makeup.
What a bummer too. And the thing is, you know, he's a burn victim like Freddy. You can't mistake the two.
No, not at all.
You know, like the burn,
the
melted just face, the aesthetic of Cropsey, he just looks so fucking disturbing.
Yeah.
And what a great movie. I like that one a lot. Great character.
Yeah.
All right. My next one's another good guy that I feel like they should have done more with more recently. And that's Jake, played by Dewan Guy in Candyman, the little boy.
Wow.
That was his first movie. Dewan Guy's first movie. That little kid brought a hell of a lot of heart and actual tension when he was telling Helen about the kid who got his dick cut off by a killer, you know, in the 70s or whatever. And, you know, the guy came out and his hair turned white and all this. The way this kid delivered a story made my hair stand up. And he did it so convincingly. And he's such a young kid. And even later when people are like, Candyman's just a myth, kid. And he's like, you lied to me. You know, you actually feel the pain in this kid. Like, you betrayed me when I trusted to tell you this stuff. And it was one of those deals where when Jordan Peele and them brought Candyman back a couple years ago, a lot of people probably wrote it off as a remake. And it's a sequel. It's a direct sequel. I think they could have brought him back. Like, because a lot of people, the Cabrini Green residents from that first movie, you know, we visit some of them again, and Cabrini Green is still a very prominent area in the new Candyman.
Yeah.
That I would have thought, I don't know, if have you seen the new one?
Yeah.
The laundromat guy who winds up playing a very big part of the movie. Why couldn't that be him? You know, like, there were so many ways you could have tied.
There's always a way to put, put him in.
Yeah. And to me, that character to me was another one like Kinderman where you're watching the movie for Candyman. You're watching the movie for the violence and the scares.
Yeah.
This little kid who's stuck in the middle of a ghetto, is like, this kid is too small for the dangers of this project. He's another one that's just like you latch onto because you're just like, this is innocence destroyed by whether it be gangs or the myth of Candyman. This kid is screwed for life, but he's tough. He's a tough kid. And I always thought he was an underappreciated character. He was sort of like, he could have been a Tommy Jarvis.
Yeah.
There was potential. And I don't think anyone ever took it. And, you know, I think that's one of the lesser respected roles in that movie, much less in the genre. Because kids, there's always creepy kids. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. But he didn't have that role. He wasn't here to scare you. He was here for exposition, and he was here to make you sad because of his situation. And I thought the kid nailed it. He was so fucking good, and he couldn't have been more than, what, 7, 8? He's a little kid in that movie.
Yeah.
But he was one that, when I watch Candyman, I latch onto that kid. He's a really cool kid in that movie, and I was hoping to see more of him in subsequent films.
Okay, well, my third one is Frank Zito.
Maniac.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a tough movie. Tough role, too. Right.
I just don't understand why there's not more love for that.
Well, not just that, but why? I mean, I get that it's an iconic poster, and it's clearly not him. It was made before the movie. But How did the poster become more popular than the killer it represents?
Yeah, it's weird.
Frank Zito, he's one that, especially if you're into true crime, that is such a realistic portrayal of a very disturbed individual.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Spinell plays him disturbingly well.
It's a flawless performance.
It is. It's probably one of the best performances in his career, and he's had a lot of good performances. Yeah. But Zito at Maniac is...
And that's one of those things where I'm like...
He's terrifying.
I would love to have a Frank Zito figure.
Yeah.
You know, trick or treat, do a 1/6 scale. You know, I think that would look so fucking badass, mm-hmm. you know? And that's where a lot of these things on my list is like, because I'm a collector.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I do love, you know, all of the mainstays of horror, you know, whether sure. it be Myers or, you know, Krueger or, you know, all of them. So it's like being able to, you know, build on that world. There's so many other options, you know, to be able to throw their name in the hat.
Well, like, you know, that being a Maniac's a Lustig flick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even by extension, Maniac Cop.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect for a NECA figure. Nothing. We got nothing. But Zito would have been, I'd have bought a Zito.
Yeah, same.
For sure.
And again, like I said, that's where I'm coming from with these characters. They're movies that I had a lot of fun with. I watch them, you know, there's rewatchability. And I root for a lot of these guys because it is so fucked up. It's so twisted. They are such a big presence. I think that they overshadow the regular characters. There's hundreds of horror movies out there where there's a killer that just,
Yeah, they didn't leave an impression.
They didn't leave a mark. And I'm like, okay, I get it, you know? But like with these guys, it's like, they really stand out. And that's the thing is like, from the first time to the last time Frank Zito's on screen, you're just like, I never want to be in the same room with this man.
No. I mean, he's terrifying.
He is terrifying.
He's so unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
But he's unhinged in such a realistic way.
Yeah.
Like him just, the first 5-10 minutes of the movie is just him rambling to himself in his apartment. And it's like.
Oh, in that apartment. Wow.
Yeah, I know. And you feel like I shouldn't be here watching this. Mm-hmm. You feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
From the get.
Yeah.
And he hasn't even killed anyone yet.
Yep.
And when he does, it's such startling acts of violence.
Yeah.
The notoriety of this movie alone should have propelled it into some sort of franchise, you mm-hmm. know, but,
and that, ooh, the fucking remake.
I never watched it.
Ooh.
I own it
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure I'll get to it eventually, but Joe Spinell just that's his character.
Yeah.
That's,
and that was the thing is like, you know, obviously I went and I saw it cause I was like, okay, all right. I mean,
they're remaking everything.
I do have an ability of suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Okay, you know, it's fine. I've given a lot of actors a lot of chances in roles, a lot of Batman stuff, and some I hate, some I love. So, I'm able to go into it with an open mind and just see it as something new.
Sure.
And not hold it to the predecessor.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw this, I was just like, no.
This is Elijah Wood,
yeah.
correct?
Yeah. And it's nothing against him.
No.
And it's nothing against his performance.
He can do creepy.
Yes, he can. He really can. And don't get me wrong, he did. And I know there's lots of people that do like the movie. I thought it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really did. But I was not invested the way I was with Spinell.
See, in a lot the same way, I still haven't watched Gus Van Sant's Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Because Anthony Perkins is so perfect.
Yeah.
I felt roughly the same way when they remade Maniac that I'm like, nobody, I can't think of anyone who could fill Joe's.
Well, I'll be honest with you.
But
that's a good Psycho. That's Gus's? A good Psycho. Yeah.
Really?
I do like it.
It just seems so.
I think it's just, like I said, it's useless. Just back to being able to fucking separate myself from, you know, from the originals.
Yeah.
You
no, know? I mean, again, both of them, I own
yeah.
the Psycho remake, I own the Maniac remake. They just sit there.
Yeah, I own the Psycho remake. I don't own the Maniac.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't impressed.
I'll probably get around to it eventually. But yeah, to me.
It's a different interpretation.
It is.
It's a different vision, you know. And I'm always cool with that. Because I always sure. want to see if someone's going to bring something different to something.
Right.
And that's what he did. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. You know, he still captures the story.
Mm-hmm.
But he's telling it in a completely different way. A little harsher. A little real,
mm-hmm.
more raw, and I can respect that.
Yeah.
You know, it is. But I also see your point of like,
Well, the fact that it was frame for frame, shot for shot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, you're taking remake to a ludicrous extreme.
I see that.
And it's like, he, at one point in an interview, he claimed to have said, "I did it to prove that you can't remake Hitchcock." Well, if you did, you wasted millions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah.
To make a point, you know?
Right. I think he's a fucking bizarre dude. I think that's all it boils down to.
He's a strange cat, but it's just one of those deals where the words frame for frame really repelled me.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, well, I could just watch Psycho if you're just going to do that.
Right.
I could just watch the old one. I don't need to see it in color.
Yeah.
You know, if that's all you're doing and with a new cast, it was just, eh. And whereas Maniac, I think they were trying to do something new-ish. I think they were trying to make him more of like a Dahmer, especially casting Elijah, who, for all intents and purposes, his performance in Sin City as the creepy glasses-wearing psychopath, I'd have been sold. I'm like, yeah, he could do creepy, clearly. Yeah. But there's just something deeply disturbing about Zito that I'm like, no one's going to capture that.
Oh, it's the ultimate boogeyman.
It is. And the thing is, I think the closest you can come, and it sounds very weird saying this, is Patrick Bateman for completely different reasons.
Okay.
Both of them feel like a true crime killer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all know a Patrick Bateman. We've all seen a Zito. And those movies are disturbing because they feel so real.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't Jasons or Michaels or Freddies. These are guys you've probably passed on the street, and they've done horrible, horrible things, you know? So yeah, no, I'm right there with you with Zito. And I do think that there should be a lot more Maniac stuff out there.
Oh my God, figures. Oh God, come on, Trick or Treat.
Yeah.
Come on.
Now, my next two are definitely more in what we're talking about, where they, why aren't there toys? Why aren't there sequels? Whatever. My next one is Sergeant Dammers from The Frighteners. Jeffrey fucking Combs as probably the wackiest, nuttiest character since Herbert West. In my opinion, it's his second best, most iconic performance. But the thing that I get hung up on, and again, Frighteners, I mean, Judge, all these characters, there could be NECA toys.
Oh, yeah.
Bannister, the Reaper, Judge, you know, the dog, whatever. Dammers could be a fucking character, you know, a toy you could pick up. But the thing that sticks out to me is the scene where he rips his shirt open and shows all the scars and brandings and all this shit. And I'm like, how many stories could you tell with him?
Mm-hmm.
How many fucked up? I mean, one of them in the director's cut, I think he even says there's a swastika on his palm. And they cut it out in the theatrical. But he's like, that was when I was part of the Manson family. And it's like, there's a whole story there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's this undercover FBI agent who infiltrates cults to bring them down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done it for so long that he's out of his fucking mind. And now he's a killer. And I'm like, even if you didn't make 10 Frighteners movies with Michael J. Fox, obviously you can't. How many other stories could you tell with Milton Dammers to show how he became the spaz that he is now in the Frighteners? And he's one that I think there should be toys. There could be spinoffs. There could be comics. Yeah. All about the fucked up shit he witnessed or was a party to. There could be a story for every scar on his body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one I think that's a well that could have been dove into a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Because when I went to the theater and I saw the movie, I was definitely into it. It's a great fucking movie.
Very original.
But when he showed up, I was like, I want him in every shot.
Right. Because he comes in, and he doesn't come in like a tornado.
No, not at all.
It's one of those deals where the first shot he's in, the focus is on Trini Alvarado.
Yeah.
She's being interrogated or questioned by Troy Evans from Halloween 5, from the episode we were talking about. And if you pay attention just over her shoulder, he's not even in the shot clearly. You see him walk in and someone's in front of him and he abruptly stops and like does this like, get the fuck out of my way. There's no focus on him at all.
Mm-mm.
You just have to notice it in the upper left corner of the screen. He's already acting like a spaz and he's been on screen for 2 fucking seconds.
Yeah.
And then for him to question this woman from outside the office, he's walking backwards even further away from her. And then finally, I just have a problem with women yelling. Oh my God. And then he delivers this line that me and my family still say to this day, you're violating my territorial bubble. Oh my fucking God. Everyone violates my territorial bubble. You know what I mean? I was just, what a funny fucking character. One of the gifts to that movie, when you watch the outtakes, is his interrogation of Michael J. Fox. The two of them in the room together. Yeah. The way it is in the movie is funny as hell because they keep doing these close-ups of his mouth, his beady little eyes and shit. And to my understanding, Michael J. Fox, he's got his eyes covered.
Yeah.
And his hands are shaking because he's just being berated by this guy. He's under there laughing his fucking ass off, trying to hide it from the camera because Jeffrey Combs is in full Jeffrey Combs mode, leaning over right in his face going, what about the guy in the toilet? What did he do to you, Frank? Piss on your hush puppies. And I'm like, I wouldn't be able to get through a fucking scene with this guy. I would lose it. So goddamn funny. But again, that one's kind of a spread too, because I think Judge and, you know, the Chi McBride character, the black guy from the 70s, and, you know, the little varsity dude, all these ghosts and stuff, they're fun, colorful characters.
Yeah, they are.
You could have a Frighteners collection of NECA toys.
Yeah, you could. You could.
Easily. And yeah. It doesn't
happen. But nothing stands out in that movie to me more than Jeffrey Combs.
No, he commandeers the film.
He does.
And he comes in. He's probably not seen until about the 45 minutes.
Yeah, that's why I said when I went and I saw it, I was like, okay, this is cool. It's a fun story. It's Peter Jackson. It's what I need.
Yeah.
But then when he showed up, I was just like, uh-oh.
Yep.
You know, and it's just every scene.
Every scene he's in. And it's the way he talks.
Yeah.
It's the fidgety way he moves.
Yes.
It's the stuff he's doing with his fingers.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a raised eyebrow. Everything is so animated. It's such a perfect spastic performance that you can't not watch him when he's on
screen. And it just goes back to what an extremely talented actor he is.
Oh, Jeffrey Combs he's the best.
Because it's not so much the role, because, you know, if you put someone else in that role, it would not be the same.
Not even close.
No.
And in fact, I'm gonna admit something here. This is gonna take my card away a little bit.
Uh-oh.
I'd seen him occasionally in stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea. This is early days of IMDb.
Okay.
His performance had such an impression on me that I'm like, I gotta find out who this fucking guy is. Hadn't even seen Reanimator.
Okay.
So unlike most diehard horror fans who, when he walks on screen, you go, Herbert West, I wasn't that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He looked kind of familiar. I'd seen him here and there. But it was like, when I looked him up, I'm looking at his IMDb and I'm like, I've heard of this. I've heard of this. I've heard of this. And I'll never forget one October, not long after the Frighteners hit VHS, I went to Movie Gallery out by me. They used to have 25-cent Tuesdays. Anything old that's not on the new release wall is a quarter.
Okay.
I went in with my little list and I'm like, Reanimator, Bride of Reanimator, Castle Freak, Cellar Dweller. You know, he's in Cellar Dweller for 10 minutes. He showed up in everything. And I walked out with a fucking stack of Jeffrey Combs movies and just immersed myself in this guy's genius. I've been a diehard fan ever since. But it was the Frighteners that made me go, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Because he is the shit.
Yeah.
I love this fucking guy. And I've loved him ever since. And of course, when I saw Reanimator, I was like, no wonder this guy's got the following he does.
Right.
Amazing film, amazing character. And it's the same thing, just not as spastic. He's very clipped and consonant, and he's very condescending, and he's just above all this shit. And you're like, I fucking love him. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. So yeah, Combs is.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good pull, man.
That's a good one, I think.
Yeah, that is a good pull. I would love to have a bunch of NECA figures, trick-or-treat figures of his characters.
Oh, it would be so cool.
Yeah, yep. No, that would be awesome. Well,
with or without the leaded breastplate, you know.
Yeah.
And the donut that he has to sit on.
Yeah.
The asshole with an Uzi.
So my next one is not your, like, typical killer horror guy, whatever it is, like the rest of, you know, like Horace Pinker and Cropsey. And he's a little more real, a little more raw, a little more disturbing. And I think that's what made him stand out to me.
Sure.
But it's also like, he's not on the radar as far as like everyone else, you know. Sure. Like, and that's John Ryder from The Hitcher.
The Hitcher.
Yeah.
Terrifying character. Absolutely terrifying. I revisited that one before flying out.
Uh-huh.
Because I always send you my picture.
Yeah.
And you described that movie perfectly. You said that movie is void of hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it is. It's a very depressing, very oppressive film.
Yeah.
And I personally, and I'm Kruger is probably going to crucify me for this. I think he's scarier as Ryder than he is in Blade Runner. I think Rutger.
Well, then he's going to crucify both of us because he definitely is.
Dude, Rutger Hauer has never been more terrifying than he was as Ryder. And it is. The scary thing is he's so natural.
Mm-hmm.
He's such a naturally scary.
And you know what else lends to it as well? He also has a kind face.
In a weird way.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing really about. Even in something like Blind Fury, where he's a good guy.
Right.
I don't entirely trust him because he's Rutger fucking Hauer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But his facial features don't lend themselves to untrustworthy.
Not like a Jack Nicholson.
No, not at all.
No.
So you know, he can play a bunch of different things.
He could.
So that's why when I did see this, it was just like, oh man. Like, you know, and in a way it just ramps and he's so cold-hearted.
Extremely.
The cold-heartedness is what really is terrifying about that movie.
The thing that creeps me out the most about him is, and there's been studies on this movie. There's a theory that the movie is about homosexuality. Saying C. Thomas Howell is gay and Ryder is the looming presence of gay. Like it's his id.
Where did this come from?
This is a theory that came out years ago.
Okay.
That,
well, yeah, because there are tons of theories on this movie.
Because the movie's very, I don't want to say open-ended. It's very open to interpretation.
It is, yeah. There are loose ends in the movie.
Right, because it's not just a crazy action slasher movie. There's things about it that you're like, are these guys telepathically connected? Is he even real? Is mm-hmm. this, you know, there's...
Well, because I think the original script is, I mean, it's extremely different than what they shot.
Yeah, which I didn't know.
Yeah, the first script is, I heard it's 1,000 times worse.
Violence-wise
yes.
and everything?
Sure. Yeah.
Which, I mean, the movie's got some very shocking violence mm-hmm. in it.
Oh, the truck scene?
The truck scene alone.
God damn.
It's so,
that's that hopelessness. You know what I mean? Is. It's like, how do you fix this? How do you save her?
And that's one of the things that makes him creepy to me is that scene in particular, his performance in the cab of that semi.
Uh-huh.
He wants the kid to kill him. And when he can't, just the way Ryder goes, you useless waste. And it's like, he's not saying it to be mean or threatening. He's saying it like, I got to keep going on the way I am. I know what I am, and I just got to keep doing this. And it was like, that's, again, the hopelessness mm-hmm. of, by not killing me, I have to keep ruining lives. And it's such a weird, scary thought.
Yeah.
And no one could play it quite like he did. There's a scene in the diner. Was it a diner or a truck stop?
Yeah, it's like same.
Where he's, so,
yeah,
where he's got the stop. Gun under the table.
Mm-hmm.
He plays it flirtatiously. It's very flirtatiously. Because mm-hmm. he goes, you're not going to shoot me, kid. And he goes, oh, yeah? And he goes, I know damn sure I'll shoot mine. And under the table, he's just got finger guns.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then he bangs the table and makes the kid jump. And instead of being threatening, the smirk he gives him is almost this playful, you know,
mm-hmm.
this is how a guy teases a girl that he likes. You know, it's played so ambiguous
mm-hmm.
that it's very magnetic, very hard to look away from.
Yeah, it is.
And it's I think it's such a towering performance that doesn't get the love it deserves for yeah. sure.
Because and even iconic is the fact that his story, where did he start? What happened?
Purposely doesn't tell you.
Right. And I think that's why I think there could have been more. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? There could have been more. And that, you know, there could have been a franchise out sure. of him. There really yep. could have.
I don't even remember what they did with Hitcher 2 with Jake Busey, but I want to say it was almost like American Psycho 2 where you yeah. solidified something. You gave me an answer I didn't need. And it could have just stayed where it was, but he's another one that I would buy a Ryder NECA figure.
Oh my God.
With shotgun. All day you know, long. And I yep. mean, he's just so fucking cool and just so creepy. And yeah, Rutger Hauer, that might be one of my favorite performances of his.
Oh, it is mine for sure.
Period.
Yeah, it is mine for sure.
It's just so good.
Yeah. Well, I only have one more.
Me too. So. And mine's kind of a combo.
Okay.
Again, so much room to do stories, so much room to bring back, but I understand why not. That doesn't change the fact that we need toys.
Mm-hmm.
We need fucking toys. And that is Breaker and the Collector from Tales from the Crypt's Demon Knight. When we meet them, they have been chasing each other for centuries. You know, I mean, when we get the backstory, Bill Sadler, Billy Zane, the epitome of good, the epitome of evil, in this constant chase for the welfare of the planet, the world, the universe, whatever. And when we catch up with them, it's like the end of a car chase. They even hit the car and blow up, and the rest of the movie is just him explaining who he is while holed up in this dive, this hotel, whatever. And man, Billy Zane and William Sadler were both so fucking good in those roles. And there could be prequel comics. There mm-hmm. could be other movies. Maybe not other movies, because by virtue of being a Tales from the Crypt film, it's an anthology.
Yeah.
It's a one and done. So I understand why we never got more movies with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But in the land of comics and stuff,
they could live on forever.
They could live on forever, and we could find out all the crazy fucked up shit that's
them been. Young, yes. Very young.
I mean, you know, we get a flashback of Breaker. He's in what, World War I?
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that.
Yeah.
And this key that he's got dates all the way back to the crucifixion of Christ.
Yeah.
There's so much story in
Demon Knight. It's a deep well for sure.
And it's just Ernest Dickerson and, you know, his team. They made a perfect 90-minute movie out of it.
Yeah.
That could have went a million different ways mm-hmm. had it been not housed within Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change it for nothing. It's a brilliant Tales from the Crypt movie, and it's one of my favorite horror films of the 90s. It's just so slick and so dark and so scary. I went into it expecting a Tales from the Crypt episode. I was used to the comedy and the goofiness and the gore. I did not expect to be scared. Demon Knight scared me. I thought it was a scary movie. It was intense. And I loved every fucking minute of it. I loved the makeup. I loved the way the demons looked.
Soundtrack.
The soundtrack is epic. We've talked about that in another mm-hmm. episode. But I think The Collector and Breaker could very easily have spawned an entire side quest, Evil Dead style comic yeah. series that could have gone for years.
Yeah. I mean, even a TV show. TV yeah. show would have worked.
I think they're two very iconic characters trapped in a bubble.
Yeah.
And again, NECA figures, you could have the key.
Mm-hmm.
You could have, you know, you could make NECA figures of the reptilian demons that he pulls out of the ground. You
yeah.
know? You could have those guys. You could have the possessed kid with the elongated mouth. You know, yeah. Dick Miller.
Yeah.
With detachable head and, you know, arrows and shit. So much
you and that's do. It. That's the thing is, like, these people are just so much bigger than what they were in these films.
Correct.
You know, their world was vast.
Very.
You know, and I feel like it was just a minor glimpse and we didn't get enough.
No. And you know? And we did get the tease at the end with Jada Pinkett. We have
being bald?
Being bald.
Okay.
But we don't. You keep that out your mouth.
Okay, sorry.
Keep it out your goddamn mouth.
My bad, Will.
She's the new Demon Knight,
mm-hmm.
and we meet a new collector, and you're like, and the stories just continue.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to continue until the end of the world.
I
totally got
that, but I also was of the same, like, wait, I want to know more about them.
I did too.
Because I was the same way with the movie with those guys.
Because we were catching the end of a very long tale.
Yeah.
It ended.
And it was almost like, we don't know enough.
I don't.
I want to know more.
I know the novelization gives you a lot.
Does it?
But it's not enough. I mean, to me, there's a franchise housed within the Demon Knight mythology that I would love to have seen expanded upon.
Yeah.
And still could.
Yeah.
I still think they could. I mean, we're going to do an episode soon about EC.
Mm-hmm.
This is an EC property. You know, Demon Knight, Tales from the Crypt.
Right.
You could revisit these characters
yeah.
in a Tales from the Crypt comic down the line. I feel like it's a no-brainer. Breaker and the Collector.
Right.
You know, I
right.
just think that's...
Yeah, there's more to their story.
And it was like, I couldn't choose one or the other because they're a pair.
You know what?
You're right. They're yin and yang.
You're definitely right about that.
So...
Because that is a right down the middle.
It is.
For both of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's just for two very different reasons.
And that's actually good. That's good character development and writing.
Extremely.
That you can equally love these two characters that are on the opposite sides.
Mm-hmm.
Love them the same.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, Billy Zane, the charm.
Oh my God.
And how funny he is. Allegedly, that's the movie that got him the gig in Titanic.
Oh, no shit.
Swear to God. I read that James Cameron saw his performance and was like, that guy.
Wow.
But the other thing is Bill Sadler, a career of playing heavies. He's the bad guy from Die Hard 2.
Oh, no, he's fucking amazing.
He's the Grim Reaper in Bill and Ted. Yeah. You know, he's a very versatile actor, but this movie, he got to be the hero. He is the main guy when he's always the side character.
Yeah.
And he kicked fucking ass and would have loved to have seen Breaker get more screen time, more everything. But yeah, to me, that's a story that you could make a complete novel series out of, you know, and it's just, it would be amazing.
Well, I'm impressed with your pulls on all of them.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really cool. Because I never even went the way of good guys.
No.
You know, and I like the combo, the way you ended it with a combo. You know, that's fucking cool.
But that's the thing. The whole point is we both were choosing people that nobody talks about. Nobody.
Yeah.
And, you know, what sounds like great pulls to both of us, it's because they're not talked about.
Yeah, and there's people that don't even know these characters.
And it's like, dude, these are worlds you can open up, man.
Yeah.
And I think it's great.
So my last one, and the reason why he is my last one is because he's one of my favorite ones out of the last four that I had said.
Sure.
Because he is in the wheelhouse of Leatherface, Michael Myers, you know, like because he does don a mask and he does, you know, he is that kind of a killer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw the movie, I was just like, this is different.
Yeah.
It's fucking very fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also, you know, in that 2006 era.
Okay.
All right. Where movies were a little more polished.
A little more self-aware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is Leslie Vernon from Behind the Mask.
Mm-hmm.
Saw it in a theater and was from jump. I was like, this is fucking...
5 minutes into the movie, you're like, I get it.
And it's revolutionary.
I'm along for the ride.
I really thought it was a revolutionary
film. It is.
Film. I feel like it was changing cinema.
It really did. To me, it's every bit as impactful as the first Scream.
Yes.
Every bit as impactful later on as Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Because it took the genre and turned it on its head.
Yep.
And yeah, Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon is highly recommended. You guys have got to...
Yes.
Hunt this one down. And that's the thing. You got to hunt it down because it's not Jason. It's not Freddy. It's not readily available.
Right.
And what a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is such an iconic looking character.
He is.
Great design. Amazing performance.
I mean, the story alone, it's so clever.
It is. And the thing is.
It was fitting for the time in 08 of what was going on.
Sure.
You know, it is a cool social commentary.
It is a fun social commentary. It was a disruption to the status quo.
Yeah.
Because post Scream, the genre was starting to settle again into a pattern. And this one, I feel like this one would appeal especially to the millions of people who love The Office. It's the fucking Office with a slasher. It's basically, for those who don't know, it's a documentary film crew invited into the life of a serial killer who is showing them the tropes of being a slasher. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. But every cliche you've ever seen in every horror movie, he planned it that way.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I
love the scene where he goes to the house in the daytime.
Yes.
And he's like, you know, we'll come back tonight, but you know, here's this window. They can do this. Got to watch. They don't jump out here. It's genius.
He goes into the work shed and he goes, all of these potential weapons I've sabotaged in some way. If someone wants to climb out that window, like you said, he's like, I've already pre-cut branches so that they just fall. You know, it's the scene where he's hitting the boxing bag.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you got to understand, man, the cardio that you got to do for this job. People are running all over the place and I got to look like I'm walking. He's like, it's not fair. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just so funny. And it was just such a great performance.
It is.
So fucking smart.
It's like for horror fans, it's the ultimate peek behind the curtain.
It is.
Into the mind of a killer.
Into the mind of a killer and a very self-aware.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was about that movie is it lulls you into a sense of comfort because you're like, this is a good guy.
Yeah.
It turns on a dime and gets very dark.
Very dark.
You come to find out, amidst all the joking, he's very serious about what he's going to do tonight.
Yeah. He's on par with all the other fucking iconic killers.
You guys are not going to fuck this up for me. Yeah. I know we're buds. I know you're filming. Do not get in my way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment in that movie where the entire thing flips and you're like,
yeah,
shit, he's a dangerous fucking guy. Mm-hmm. He's not just fucking around here. And the movie, if it has you by the balls the way it did everyone else, that moment is so impactful. That's when he becomes an icon because you're like, this movie's a joke. It's just kind of goofing, you know, and it's not.
Yeah.
Not at all.
And he is the one out of my list that did yield a very small, small run of toys.
Did he? I didn't even know that.
But it was very limited, very, very, and I'm sure they're super expensive. They looked fucking amazing.
Sure.
But I still feel like it's something because, I mean, there's 100 Leatherface, there's 100 Freddy's, there's 100 Michael Myers, you know, it's like, and that's the same thing with him. They could do different costumes and they could do different, you know, different stages of the film, you know. Another thing about the film is you can tell that the filmmakers love the genre.
Oh,
because
for sure.
The Easter eggs, and I don't want to give too many of them away because I want people to be able to, like, you know, go back in and experience it for themselves the first time.
Especially repeat viewings. You notice something new all the time.
There's just, I mean, some of the references you're going to see, you know, are, you know, Pet Sematary.
Yep.
You know, you're going to see Halloween, obviously. You know, you're going to see Nightmare on Elm Street. You're going to see tons of references. And it's just like, it is like an ultimate love letter to the genre.
It is.
You know, and that's why I feel like Leslie Vernon should be right up there on the Mount Rushmore.
I agree.
You know, I really do. Even though there's not that much room for him, but I mean, he's up there, man.
At least in the second tier, he should be shoulder to shoulder with Ghostface.
Yes.
You know, Candyman.
Yeah.
To me, he's so underappreciated.
He is.
But it's such a brilliant movie.
It is a brilliant movie.
Such brilliant writing and directing and performing. It's flawless.
Yeah.
And it was, again, to me, like Scream and Cabin in the Woods, you only get one of these movies like every 10 years where they go, we're going to shake it up for you.
Yeah.
And because to me, movies like Leslie Vernon and Cabin in the Woods in particular, they're rewarding because they make you go back and watch these movies with new eyes.
Yeah.
And you've just found a way to not only entertain me for 90 minutes, you've put a new spin on things I already love.
Mm-hmm.
And not a bad one.
Yeah.
Because Leslie Vernon is not a cynical film.
No.
It's not trying to fuck with the genre.
Nope.
It's just inhabiting it and pulling its jokes and still very serious about what it's doing.
Yep. It fits very well.
Yeah.
It fits
excellent
very
well.
Movie. I would love to see Severin get a hold of it and do her magic with it.
I would love that. I just want to see more because I know they wrote a script for a sequel.
Yeah.
And it floated around for a while. And I can't wait for someone give this guy the fucking budget.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Because he's a great filmmaker.
Enough people love this movie that I feel like it's more than a cult following. It deserves life beyond 2006.
That's a great way to end it, man.
I think so too, man. Great one.
We'll have to do it again because there are a few more.
Oh, I'm sure.
That didn't make this list, so we could revisit it another time. So.
Absolutely.
I guess that's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, man. Well, until next time.
See you guys.